This is the State of Things broadcasting from the American Tobacco Historic District. I'm Frank Stachow. Stephen Burke and Randy Campbell have managed to pack 1,200 buildings into their home in Hillsboro, North Carolina. It's an average-sized home, but the buildings are tiny. They have assembled an extensive collection of American folk art structures, everything from movie theaters to gas stations to family homes. And they represent a wide swath of American architecture through the ages. The new documentary, Rendered Small, takes an intimate look at this collection and its keepers. North Carolina State University film professor Marsha Gordon and architect Lewis Cherry are co-directors of the film. Marsha, of course, one of the co-hosts of Movies on the Radio. Welcome back, Marsha.
Thanks for having us.
Lewis, this is where she is once a month.
Lewis, welcome. I
know it well. Welcome to the State of Things, and also folk art collector Stephen Burke. Hello, Stephen.
Hello.
So we did a brief description, but give us a broader description of the collection that you've assembled at your home in Hillsboro.
Americans have been impelled to render small structures, and most of us don't know that. Picture with me our house in Hillsboro, filled with the buildings of American architectural history from the mid-19th until the mid-20th century. As you referenced, houses and churches, gas stations, carousels, Ferris wheels, factories, the buildings of American places. Most are anonymous. Sizes range from a few inches to a few feet. None are dollhouses or birdhouses. Some are based on real buildings, buildings that have been lost or destroyed or that are loved. Some are historic. Look. There's the U.S. Capitol. There's the Moravian Church in downtown Winston-Salem. Most, however, seem to spring from an imaginative impulse to render small one's own place. Nicely, they please everyone of all sorts and types. What they delight.
They do. And what kinds of materials can we expect to see?
Cigar boxes. Velveeta cheese boxes from an earlier era, metal, in the main found materials that have been imaginatively shaped to render small that which is mostly large.
Marsha, tell us about this. You've been visiting Stephen and his collection for more than a decade. Tell us about how you got interested in this.
Yeah, well, I was actually working on an exhibition at what is now the Gregg Museum of Art, was then the Gallery of Art and Design, and Charlotte Wainwright was kind enough to introduce me to Stephen and Randy and to say, look, you have got to go see this collection. You would love it. And so she introduced us. I walked in, and I wish I could say I knew right then I would make a documentary about it one day. But that was not the case, but I was completely blown away by the magic of this universe. And as Stephen well knows, I asked to come back many, many times and was invited back over the years, and really kind of every time was marveling in some new aspect of it that I hadn't noticed before. As you can imagine, when confronted with 1,200 plus of something, you can't see it all, no matter how many times you go back. And so I was always finding new textures and new things that I had questions about and new things that I went, wow, that's the best one. That's the best one. And so it's just a kind of a process of going from being a huge admirer and fan to saying, you know what? I think I can actually imagine doing something with this project or with this amazing collection. And that's kind of how the documentary started.
Lewis, one can imagine how a filmmaker might walk in, or somebody interested in film might at some point, if not immediately, say to themselves, this is the subject of a film. And one can imagine any one of us walking in and, as you say, see 1,200 of anything and be pretty taken by it. But you're an architect. You've seen these. How do you view these as an architect?
Well, the collection is so diverse, and so it in one sense it represents kind of a history of American architecture as these various makers are representing what they see and structures that they love. But many of them are just fantastical, and they're very imaginative and very playful, and they represent sort of that folk art naive tradition that we think about paintings and other forms just being very expressive.
Stephen, what got you started? When did you first see? Was it one building that did this for you, or how did you get started?
I was in Brightleaf Square in 1985. I had my $185 tax refund check in my pocket. I saw a structure at an antique store. With the financial logic that unfortunately has characterized me ever since, I thought, oh, good, it's $165. It's free. More importantly, it triggered me to that question that precedes any psychosis and addiction, which is, I like this. I wonder if there are more.
Yeah. And did you go right out and get more? I mean, how long did it take before the obsession manifest?
I began to look at antique shops and antique shows to find these structures, which are both not common, but also not rare. They are around. That was a time-consuming task. Randy and I traveled. However, the advent of online purchasing, eBay and other sources, has made enormously easier feeding our architectural obsession.
Is it our or is it just your?
In the way of any good marriage, we accommodate and dovetail. My husband, Randy, is happily prepared to plant. I'm happily prepared to building.
One might understand why he likes to get out into the garden now and then. You know, away from all the buildings. Just a bit? No?
Our property is filled with five large Greek Revival buildings that we have designed ourselves. They are filled with all of these small buildings. We have reached accommodation.
Let's play a clip from the film, because that's what we're talking about today. So we're talking with Stephen. He's here, part of the marriage that has collected and assembled these tiny houses. We're also talking to filmmakers Marcia Gordon and Lewis Cherry. Who we're not talking with is Randy Campbell, and he will tell you what he thinks of all of this as we play a clip from the film.
What I might wish is that there's one space somewhere that's free of buildings, and maybe have a retreat we could go to that was a little different. Maybe that's a silly expectation, because when you care about things this much, they tend to invade all the parts of your life. So as a result, these buildings are in bathrooms, kitchen, bedrooms, everywhere. There's no escape. But then when you go outdoors, there's no escape from plants pretty much either. So it's wonderful and sometimes a bit of a pain too. But it's here, and there might be what feels like a little love-hate relationship, but there's not. I think the love wins out, because it's things that people put a lot of effort into, that they loved, they love making, and it's nice to honor that. It's nice to know that your home honors the efforts of other people from times past.
Randy Campbell, in a clip from the documentary Rendered Small. I'm joined by the collector at the heart of that film, Stephen Burke. Also with me, co-directors Marcia Gordon and Lewis Cherry. The film screens this Friday at 8:30 p.m. at the North Carolina Museum of History in Raleigh, part of the Longleaf Film Festival. Stephen, how long have you been doing this?
Since 1985.
85. How has this changed your relationship?
With architecture, with Randy, or with Marcia and Lewis?
Let's start with Randy.
He came to share my passion for American architecture, large and small. We drive about. We look at buildings. I'm delighted by hip roofs and good brickwork. To translate that into small structures has proven both an interactive gambit for the two of us, and also something of a responsibility. For now, we have requests from people to come and see these items and to convey American architecture small, we think, is important.
Do you have rules about buildings you will buy and buildings you won't? Any parameters around the way it looks or the architecture?
Discipline came long and late, and now, having done this for 30 years, we do have some strictures. We no longer have a need to buy a building that is redundant to another, or that is not distinguished or curious or rare.
And so, Marcia, what about you in making a film like this? I understand this is about a 16-minute film or so. So it's a short film about little buildings. It all makes sense.
Yes.
What were your plans initially? How did you envision the film?
Yeah, well, I mean, I think that even the way Stephen has been talking about it is a kind of perfect illustration of what the impetus was from the start, which is we were mesmerized by the beauty and intrigue and kind of aesthetic kind of curiosity that we had about the collection. And then we were also intrigued with what it was like to live with the collection, because this truly is a major part of the fabric of Stephen and Randy's lives. And I think in that clip you played from the documentary, to me, that's a perfect, beautiful encapsulation of their relationship, which is they have these kind of passions and they figured out a way to live with each other's passions. And I think there's such a mutual respect and love and admiration that that was really important for us to capture as part of the story, because a collection doesn't exist without collectors. I mean, that's a ridiculous idea. And I think anytime you populate your universe with things and they are so present, they are part of the fabric of who you are as a couple as well.
And let's talk a little bit more about the things, Lewis. You said that there's a wide range of buildings here, some of them whimsical, fantastic, others, you know, in the spirit of folk art. Are there any that shed light on the architecture of a particular time or moment, or any that have sort of caught your eye in terms of what it may have taught you or you hadn't known about that kind of architecture?
Well, you do really fall in love with certain examples, and you know, I'm really struck by the use of materials like matchsticks or formica. In one case, the whole building is made of gold flecked formica, and there's just an architectural quality that you don't really necessarily see in larger buildings that you can, you know, kind of exact at that small scale.
Gives you a lot of freedom if you don't have to worry about the HVAC.
Exactly.
I think so. Exactly. I'm guessing.
Although there's a lot of interior lighting and interior detail, and I think one of the things that Lewis and I talked about a lot when we were trying to figure out the look of the documentary is that, you know, we wanted to give a sense of the scope and the scale, and obviously we couldn't shoot every building. That's a ridiculous idea. I mean, nobody could sit and watch 1,200 buildings going by one at a time, but we did want to also capture some of the richness of some of the interior detail. I mean, some of these buildings have paintings and light fixtures and flooring and characters that inhabit the spaces, and some of the buildings are monuments to buildings that are forever lost because they've been torn down. And so it's kind of incredible to see this collection as a kind of monument to things that don't also exist anymore.
Stephen?
The largest number of these were constructed, again, by mostly anonymous Americans from about 1890 until the mid-1930s. So there's a predominant revelation of the architecture of America in that era. As preservation has become more a part of common life and thinking in America, we're so happy to note this. When people come and look and wonder at these buildings, they are more inclined to now say, oh, thank you for preserving American architecture, which is both an important notation of what's at hand, but also shows us how much has been lost.
Do you have any idea why that period was the golden age of miniature building?
There were cultural imperatives. Persons made small structures to go under Christmas trees, brought out with pride at that season. Some are of the size to go with early American trains, which were larger. Many sprang from the cultural background of Germans, who rendered ever so much folk art in America in the 19th and early 20th century and seemed as prepared to render structures as anything else.
Are they still being made today? Are you finding any places that or anybody who's still producing them?
There's a difference when small structures are made now. They are more overtly self-conscious, designed to show something of a certain kind of country look or to duplicate these kind of earlier buildings.
And I think when we were doing research for the project and talking with, Stephen has done a meticulous job of researching the history of as many of these buildings and of these traditions as is possible. And one of the things that really struck me was thinking about kind of pre-war American culture and the way that people were indeed learning how to and making things in a way that when you kind of get the post-war boom and everything being kind of mass produced, all of a sudden you don't have to do that anymore, and it's cheaper and easier to buy it. And so I think that's a huge factor here.
Do you spend much time, Stephen, looking for the creators? You say many are anonymous. Are you interested in who did these?
I'm keenly interested and impelled however possible. And I have made phone calls to persons in places throughout America and quickly tried to explain why I'm calling them. Hey, I say, I have a building with the name, I think, of one of your ancestors on it. Can you tell me? And they say, oh, my God, great Uncle Frank. I wondered where that was.
Do any of them want it back?
No,
unfortunately.
Not so far.
You keep it. They don't have to build eight more buildings on their on their property. And you did. You mentioned these buildings that you built and designed. You built them precisely in order to keep these buildings.
Our house and adjoining buildings.
Yeah.
Yes. However, when we built our house, it apparently shrunk in the rain because it very soon appeared not large enough to accommodate our expanding collection.
Have you made a rule about sort of when this ends, or are you just going to keep doing it?
I plan on continuing to do it.
There you go. That's a good rule. That's the best rule I can think of. Marcia, now you are a film expert. I heard that on the radio.
Thank you.
Public radio, they call you a film expert. Therefore,
it can't
it must be
untrue.
It must be true. And, of course, you teach film at NC State. But is this your first film?
It is. And, you know, it was an intimidating barrier to cross. But I'm so glad that I did it because I've been teaching documentary for years at NC State and I've been publishing about it. And when Lewis and I started talking about doing this project, you know, I think that we quickly came to the conclusion that the only way to kind of get through it successfully was to make sure that we had a team in place of people who could advise us, who were filmmakers, of people who were willing to work with us. Kevin Wells, who teaches at UNC Greensboro, was our editor. He did an extraordinary job of helping us navigate. I mean, editing, I realize now in ways I could not have before, is the absolute backbone of any film, and kind of that painful process of taking something that's an hour, and which is what we originally kind of thought this was going to be, and it just got stronger and stronger the more we kind of streamlined it. And so there was a huge learning curve, and I'm just thrilled to kind of be on the other side of it now to get to see it with audiences.
What about you, Lewis? You're not even a film expert.
Well, actually, in art school, I was making films, and this project actually started as an idea to collaborate making a documentary. And it's like, oh, well, what documentary should we make? So it actually started as an idea of a project, and then we found the subject matter to sort of fit our idea to work together and collaborate, bringing back my old interest in filmmaking and Marcia's interest, of course, in film.
What did you learn in this process?
I learned a lot. I mean, I really had to get up to speed on all the video technology. You know, I started with 16 millimeter, and it's changed a bit since then.
Although people are still shooting in 16 millimeter,
certainly.
We did not.
But, you know, a lot of the reason we wanted to do it was really to dive in and learn by doing. And that's what we did.
Well, and I have a former student, David Hambridge, who is a documentary filmmaker now in his own right. And he came and helped us one day with a shoot and brought out his drone and gave us some lovely aerial and moving shots. And so we were fortunate. We're in such a rich area in terms of people who have incredible filmmaking and videography skills. And because of the network I've kind of accumulated over the years, going to festivals and just knowing filmmakers in our community, I really had a lot of generous time, energy, and good counsel, without which this would have been greatly impoverished.
Marcia and Lewis are modest, so let me say this. They wonderfully brought together and conjoined the three perceptions and skills required for this. First, knowledge about architecture. Second, knowledge about film as revelation. And third, incessant imagination.
Nicely said. Nicely said. I was going to ask you what it was like to have a film done about you, but I think you've just done it for us. Thank you all. And Marcia, before you leave.
Yes, sir.
We should talk about, I'm going to tell everybody where they can see your film and all of that.
Great.
But Movies on the Radio is coming up, and we're going to talk about
Mother Film. So this is kind of interesting because when we first started talking about, it's Mother's Day, surely there's films about mothers. Well, you know what? There are millions of films about mothers. And so if you have a film that's mother-centric that you find particularly interesting, let us know about it, and we will maybe talk about it on the next show.
Particularly mothers who lived in tiny homes. Marcia Gordon, film professor at NC State University, co-host of Movies on the Radio, Lewis Cherry, an architect. They are the co-directors of a new short documentary film called Rendered Small. And Stephen Burke is a folk art collector based in Hillsboro and the subject of this film. Thank all of you for being on the program.
Thank you.
Thank you for having us.
Rendered Small screens this Friday at 8:30 at the North Carolina Museum of History in Raleigh. It is a free outdoor screening. It's part of the Longleaf Film Festival. Just ahead, we talk with Chilean-American author Ariel Dorfman about his new novel, Darwin's Ghosts. Stay tuned.